You never say one.
Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. With me is Aaron O'Brien and returning champions from a little over a year ago, James Kerwin and Her Royal Highness Kipley Brown. If you don't know her calling her that, you should listen to the last episode we had them on.
My lady.
I ain't no lady.
I'm not going to touch that.
Royalty is one thing. Lady, now you're going too far.
That's right.
Anyone can be royalty if you're burning to it.
Oh, anyone can be a lady if they really want it bad enough.
Yeah, I guess.
That's true.
Just got to work at it.
Especially nowadays.
Man, I'm working at it.
Terms of being polite and delicate and genteel, nah.
Oh,
right. Not me.
So those injections I'm getting aren't going to do it for me, huh?
You need actually breast augmentation. Injections are enough for that.
Damn! Not enough collagen will fix that.
You can't get bigger with tiny pinpricks. You can't do it.
Man.
I've tried.
All right. So if in case you don't know and you haven't paused to listen to the episode from about a year and 2 months ago, these people are Kipley Brown and James Kerwin are very tied to Star Trek Continues. And if you don't know what that is, go online and look it up.
Yeah, why are you listening to this, you jerks?
What do you mean by these people?
These people.
I don't like being singled out.
I corrected myself and I said your proper names because I was pre-gaming.
He does this all the time, and it drives me crazy because like he comes in like you'd think he'd be sharp, but no, he's been having a couple drinks before, so. We're Synthaholics, so I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Synthahol's effects can be easily dismissed.
Yes.
We haven't
if
gotten
you
there
them
yet.
To be.
I don't have that hypo here.
I prefer it's green.
It's green.
I did make a green one earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he. If you don't know, Dave makes all these crazy Star Trek-esque drinks. Like, he's a mixologist, and he just makes all these crazy drinks for me. And, like, by the end of these things, I'm totally sloshed, so...
Did you make a Borg sphere from the Star Trek Experience?
I have all those recipes. Tonight, I actually made us a James T. Kirk.
There you go.
I'm drinking.
Does it have like a tiny bikini woman inside of it?
Yes.
Like a little plastic bikini dancer?
Yes. And she's green.
And a giant ice ball. So, James and Kipley are intimately tied to Star Trek Continues. The most recent episode.
Whoa.
Hey, back it up. Hey. Intimate.
Star Trek Continues and us are friends.
Just you guys.
It's a friend zone, okay?
Okay, Kipley right, and James have been friend zoned by Star Trek Continues. Whereas Kipley spends most of her time in front of the camera, James is mostly behind the camera with writing, directing, producing, and such. But this most recent episode, Kipley actually got behind the. She wrote this episode.
I wrote the teleplay, yes.
Teleplay.
Yes, I did.
With a story by Kipley Brown, James Kerwin, and Vic Mignogna.
It's wonderful.
Correct.
Maybe not in that order.
That's correct.
No, Vic would be first, then James, then me.
So wait, how does that work?
Well, you got to go from the hierarchy down. Like Vic is the head honcho. This thing wouldn't exist if it weren't for him. And the original black and white, they beamed down to a black and white planet, was Vic's idea.
Oh, cool.
I hope that wasn't a spoiler for anyone if you haven't seen it, but it's in the first 10 minutes, so no worries.
If you haven't seen the episode by now, come on, guys.
Yeah. We go full spoilers here, so if...
This is a spoilerific
podcast. So that's episode 9, What Chips Are For.
What Chips Are For.
And when you're writing it, do they both just stand over your shoulders and tell you, like, what you should be writing?
No, I, like, went underground and, like, they were, like, went... I was a little late on the deadline. They're like, what have you got? I was like, it was like top secret.
Almost done.
I know I'm like, and then I sent, you know, the whole thing. But
yeah, Vic had contacted me back in 2015, almost 2 years ago. He called me one day and he said, "Look, I, you know, so many people experienced Star Trek: The Original Series in black and white. I believe over 50% of people still had black and white televisions at the time it first aired." And even in the 70s in syndication, a lot of people still had those black and white Zeniths. And, you know, that's how he first watched it. And he said, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to find a story-motivated reason to do an episode in black and white, but have it mean something? And we tossed around some ideas, and I said, well, what if it, there's a, you know, a world where the sun is creating weird radiation, it's making people see in black and white, but it's also harming people in some way? And we tossed that around a little bit. And then kind of nothing came of it. And one day I offhandedly mentioned to Kipley, hey, isn't this a cool idea? And she's like, yeah, that sounds really cool. And like 3-4 months later, she sent us a treatment that had this great fleshed out story. And Vic called me, Vic forwarded it to me, and he called me. He said, look, Kipley just sent me this treatment based on our idea. And I think it's great. What do you think? And I looked at it and I said, yeah, it's passable.
Hey!
Wow!
No, I loved it, and so we said, hey, you want a shot at writing the teleplay for it too? Because we liked your treatment, so she did.
That's awesome.
That's epic. But I forgot we're gonna have to put you in opposite corners.
I
gotta, that's right.
What the thing about what ships are for too is wonderful. Is that and I've said this before in the past episodes because we've talked about before on our show is that. You guys really encapsulate what Star Trek, especially the original series, was like. You know, it gave you like a story, and you didn't really get it until like maybe the last like 10-15 minutes of the story. It all starts like, wait a second, I see where they're going with all this, and then you're like, man, that's a really good point, or that's, you know, it's an eye opening thing, and it's the best thing. You guys really, you know, Kipley, to your credit, you know, just coming up, tying that together into. A strong message today. I think
it's allegorical to our times.
Yes, exactly.
And also, you know, I wanted to be true to the original Star Trek, which was they wouldn't necessarily beat you over the head with a moral lesson,
right?
But like in episodes like Private Little War or Let This Be Your Last Battleground, they would,
yeah,
kind of give you both sides of the issue and let you, the viewer, decide for yourself.
And you got it if you were, you know, had half a brain cell in your head. You're like, yeah.
but so that's what I tried to do, you know, and the same thing, that you see both sides of the issue. It wasn't just one-sided, you know, so that you can, as a viewer, can, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's brilliant.
No one's right, no one's wrong. It's just what's happening.
Yeah, it's everyone's got a different side of a viewpoint,
right.
And sometimes some sides are, you know, clouded by emotions and
Vic and James especially, like when they got the treatment, were like, yeah, you got to, you know, cuz the treatment didn't have all the detail, and they're like, just make sure you represent both sides. And I'm like, I will.
I think it was wonderful.
I think it was very excellent the way it was executed, and it was so poignant for our modern 2017 after the election of our most recent president.
You would think that this many years later we'd still be having the same issues as they did when they made Star Trek originally.
I'm shocked constantly.
It's pretty sad that is the case. But I saw recently you guys got to go to ILM to showcase this episode for the students there. Is that right?
And for anyone who doesn't know the abbreviation, it's Industrial Light and Magic.
I'm sure
all of your listeners already knew that. But that's George Lucas's special effect company.
And how was that? Just walking there. I mean, walking through that place must have been amazing. But how was the actual showing it and the experience of that?
It was amazing. I mean, it was... you know, they very graciously invited us up there. There are several of the designers at ILM, including John Knoll, their lead designer, who their lead artist is their STC fans, and we never knew that, you know.
That's awesome.
Until fairly recently, and they invited us up and screened episode 9 for a lot of their executives, for a lot, you know, their designers, their senior designers, and so forth, and. basically any of their employees, I guess, who wanted to come, I think is how it was.
And wasn't it that one of their he's a writer and also a special effects magician, one of theirs, Paul Giacopo?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He just happened to accidentally discover Star Trek Continues.
Hmm.
Yeah. He was and surfing around on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what he told us. And then he found a way to contact Vic and was like, oh my gosh, why didn't I know about this? You guys are making, you know, it looks like the original series. You know, he spearheaded like this, like, let's get a screening going and just really cool. I mean, it was
it's wonderful.
They were all so gracious and awesome. And
did you get to see any cool stuff
over
there? Like, I mean, I'm sure it was, but I mean, like, was there anything like when you walked in through the building?
Dude,
there's a Yoda fountain.
There's Yoda
fountain. We have to sign non-disclosure agreements, guys. No, I mean, we did. We actually did. Yeah.
Can't talk about what you're seeing. Right?
Well, you can't talk about what you're seeing in there.
Well, I saw Michelle's picture of her close-up with R2-D2, so I knew there's at least an R2-D2 there.
And apparently a Yoda fountain, so.
Yes. No, there's great stuff. There's great stuff from all their films, from the Star Wars films, from the Star Trek films that ILM did the effects for. It's really amazing to see that stuff.
I saw a model of Slimer from Ghostbusters.
Wow. That's right. That's awesome.
That's really cool.
He was great.
And you also, before the show, you're actually telling us you got to go to Pixar, too. Was it also to show off what chips were for?
Greg Dykstra, who is their head model maker, is that his official title, James?
I think so. Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the one of their artists over there.
Senior character designer or something like that. Yeah,
He wrote episode 6 of Star Trek Continues, and he's a fan. And he was the artistic director on What Chips Are For, and they've screened other Star Trek Continues episodes there before.
Wow!
So this was continuing that tradition.
Wow, that's wonderful!
Fantastic,
man. So your next gig is doing something with ILM then, right?
I would love it, man. I would love it.
Non-disclosure. I know. I
non-disclosure. Right.
Man, those NDAs.
Man, I know.
I was just saying the Pixar guys have been really great to us. You know, they've had us up there a couple of times, and like she said, they've screened I think every episode since 5 or 6, I think, was screened up there. And Kipley and I had both been up there before. It was really wonderful to see this particular episode up on the big screen with a very, very, very good crowd, decent sized crowd. All the employees are invited to come if they have the time, and it was great.
And
thanks to Greg.
Oh yes, seeing that on the big screen, because I've only seen it either on a TV or on my laptop.
Right.
But seeing like the colors and just the way the original series looked. I've never seen an episode of the original series on a big screen, and so this is like what it would have been like. It was so.
That's great.
Oh, that's great. When I was a kid, my dad actually took me to the theater because they were doing a special showing of Trouble with Tribbles, so I got to see that on the big screen.
Oh, cool.
That's cool. That's nice.
My dad was disappointed because he said there was supposed to be like deleted scenes in it or something, and that it was the exact same episode we'd seen a dozen times before. So my dad being disappointed at it. And also, a year ago, I was at Fan Expo, and Vic Mignogna presented the international debut of Embracing the Winds there. So I got to meet Vic and see it on a bigger screen than normal. That was a lot of fun getting to see that.
Yeah,
at the Fan Expo Canada.
Yeah, well, the cool thing about we've talked about it before, but the original series and obviously Star Trek continue in the same vein is it's so visually bright, you know, like all the primary colors. So it's just such a cool thing to look at, you know. And that's kind of sad because you did mention before is that people, I never really thought about it, but people had black and white TVs and they just couldn't get it in color, and like, you know, so they were robbed of that the cool, you know, bright primary colors of Star
Trek. You know, what's interesting is that it was shot at this time when TV was making the transition from black and white to color, which is as significant as the transition from standard def to HD that happened about, you know, 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And the style in which Finnerman shot the episodes was kind of a hybrid of black and white and color lighting. He had to light it with the idea in mind that most people were going to see it in black and white. So he couldn't differentiate objects with color. He had to differentiate based on grayscale value and contrast. Hmm. I mean, black and white lighting is very different from color lighting. So Star Trek, the original series, was lit almost in an old black and white kind of way. Hmm. And that's why when you watch it in color, it has a very distinct visual lighting style that's not matched by modern TV series. I mean, modern TV series don't look anything like the lighting in TOS. And that's why, because it was designed to look good in both. And RCA, which owned NBC at the time, you know, used it as an advertisement, basically, to buy color TVs. I mean, that was a big thing. Star Trek in color, buy a color TV. So now you can watch these episodes in color. So the whole black and white aspect of the original series is something that's very, very critical to its history, and it's something that, you know, had been lost. So I'm really pleased that we could kind of bring that back, you know?
That's just something I never, I mean, I remember, you know, obviously I know the history that was like in color was a big thing, but like, yeah. I didn't really think about the business aspect or the marketing aspect of like, hey, you know, if you get a new color TV, you can watch this show in full color.
Yeah,
you know?
And it's got lots of colors on purpose.
Yeah,
just for you guys.
Exactly.
Like green women.
Green women.
I was reading these are the Voyages books. I remember like when they were testing it, they said something about like they kept color correcting her to white because they didn't understand why she was green.
Yeah, that's right. Like, actually, it's funny. Susan Oliver did not do the makeup test for Vina. Majel Barrett did. And they painted her green, and they filmed it to see how it would read, and it kept coming back from the lab color-corrected to skin tone. And they kept thinking, wow, this green makeup isn't showing up, and they make her greener and greener and greener. And then they finally figured out, what the hell's going on? It's the lab. Yeah, so.
That is hilarious.
Don't color-correct it. Just let it be, guys.
What are you supposed to lab technicians thought? They're like, damn, that girl looks seasick. You gotta
Did they not get the memo? Yeah. Science. Yeah. Fiction.
How would you accidentally make someone that green?
That's hilarious. Yeah. I love funny. That. I love that. That's awesome.
Really funny. So with Embracing the Winds, James, I got to see that at Fan Expo. Beyond directing, were you also involved with the story on that one?
I did the story. I wrote the story for Embracing the Winds. And I came up with a concept. I wrote the story, and I co-wrote the teleplay with Vic. That's the one episode that we've done that's pretty much been mine from start to finish, from conception through directing.
That's a lot of work.
That's awesome. So what made you think of Nimbus 3?
Oh, the arthropods came out of nowhere. Well, if you play Star Trek Online and you're on Nimbus 3, man, those arthropods come out of nowhere and attack you. So
that's pretty awesome.
We put little references into Star Trek Online every once in a while. We're good friends with those guys.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I'm just like, Nimbus, the planet of galactic peace. And I'm just like, huh. I guess it wasn't the planet of galactic peace yet.
It was getting there.
Well, hey. Play Star Trek Online. You'll see what I mean.
Gotcha.
Shameless plug.
Start STO.
And you might hear a familiar voice as well.
That's right.
I play a character named originally Administrator Kumar K, and then she was became Captain Kumar K.
Nice.
Starting with the New Dawn. So, but I have a British accent.
Oh, you had to do the old British thing, huh?
Well, they wanted an exotic accent, and I came with one that I thought was fairly exotic, but it ended up sounding Transylvanian, which wasn't what they wanted. So what about they were like, go with an accent. Like we tried to invent one, you know, but and so they're like, well, what accent do you know how to do? And I'm like, well, my mom's British. So that's probably the best bet.
So you just fell into that pretty fast.
Yeah.
You didn't fall into
I think I do a pretty good accent, but some here and there fans have been like, that's so fake. She doesn't do a good British accent. I'm like, oh, no.
No.
I've lost it.
Mom will be so disappointed.
Like, talk to me, Mom. I want to hear it again.
That's funny. I actually want to hear the Transylvania accent because I would love to see Dracula in command of a ship.
Captain Kumarke. I want to suck your green blood, Mr. Spock.
I love that.
Why would they turn that down? That's awesome.
Yeah, that's got to happen.
Did they fit the story.
Guys, get your typewriters out and type that up, okay? That's gonna be the last episode. Star Trek continues. Dracula takes over the Enterprise.
Kipley Brown's playing two roles. Do a Brent Spiner, yeah. Play two roles.
Oh man, I'd love that. That'd be so awesome. So off the wall.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah.
And
that'd be like Abraham Lincoln vampire.
Yeah.
Hunter.
Yes. Yeah. But
and
you know,
be like James T. Kirk, vampire hunter.
Vampire hunter.
Oh yeah. Could you imagine Klingons turning into vampires?
Oh yeah. My gosh, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that'd be the worst thing you've ever seen in your life.
It would be interesting. And earlier you said you made a shout out to Star Trek Online. Was the I guess the Carnivious Plant Gertrude reference and was a reference to the Red Shirt Diaries, right?
Well, no, Gertrude was in the.
Oh, they mentioned her. I mentioned the plant by name.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, Gertrude's in the original series.
Remember the
episode where they're all getting like.
Yeah, naked
salt.
Now or.
I didn't realize.
Oh, no, that's man, right. The salt creature. Yeah, that's what it was.
It was Mantrap.
Yeah. They debated the name. Like, he said her name was Gertrude, but someone else said it was Bogart.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh.
So I named Gertrude because it was Sulu called her Gertrude. And then I believe Nurse Rand was in favor of the other name.
Yeoman Rand, yeah.
Yeoman Rand. Sorry.
Yeah, it was Rand. Yeah, there was a scene in the botany lab between Rand and Sulu, and they're talking about that.
And it's obviously a hand in a freaking vase.
underneath a flower pot. But I thought that, you know, I wanted to bring in some of the personal stories of everyone. And you know, I binge-watched, because I'd seen them all anyway, but I, in order to prepare to write it, I just sat down and watched every single episode in a row.
Yeah.
So that my head was full of Star Trek. And I was like, that's cool. You know, I think that, you know, Sulu, his plant thing will, you know, I think that's a nice thing to bring back. And one thing I really wanted to do, because Star Trek Continues has done some of it, but for me, one of my favorite parts of Star Trek is the bickering between Spock and McCoy.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
And we have some in the series, but I kind of put it into overdrive a little and put a lot more in there. They had to cut some out.
It was beautiful.
There wasn't enough time. But I just really love that aspect of those two always butting heads.
Sure.
If our woman looked like that, we'd be extinct.
Yeah.
What was that? What was this thing that Star Trek 3 where McCoy's got his Katra, his Vulcan mind meld to Spock when they're going to go save Spock off the Genesis planet. And he goes, "You're suffering from a Vulcan mind meld." And he goes, "That green-blooded bastard. This is his revenge for all those arguments he lost." Or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, watching the original series, I noticed there was an insult that Bones says a couple times to Spock, which nowadays you'd be like, is that an insult? I don't know. But back then, and he said it like it was such a bad thing. He's like, "You and your computer brain."
Yeah.
So I use that because I'm like, "Whoa, McCoy.
Whoa, back off, that? Buddy. You're spitting all over me."
Yeah, the computer brain was like, "Oh, whoa, snap."
What do you say to him the other day? Or the other one episode? Spock says, "Your rattles and."
Oh, yeah. Your
beats and rattles?
Your beats and rattles,
beats and rattles.
Yeah, Spock, yeah.
That's a great one too. Yeah. Oh, good times between Spock and Bones.
And so, also, you know, we had the ability to build a planet set, and we had it this time. And so, you know, the good old fashioned, the big three beam down to a planet. I really liked that.
Oh, yeah.
That we could do that. You know, because that's what a lot of the episodes were like. They just beam down somewhere, and then something happens.
Absolutely. Yeah. No. That. And the building that was that just a shot from something, or was that an actual location that you guys shot? It looked.
I'll let James take that one.
Oh, the council chamber exterior.
Yeah.
Well, our genius visual effects artist Mark Bell basically created that.
Wow.
And if you look very carefully, it's completely CGI. It doesn't exist in real life, but if you look carefully, it is an amalgamation of various historical buildings on Earth, but put together in a completely different way that you've never seen before. So yeah, that was his creation.
Oh, well, to his credit, I thought it was a real place, so I
That's awesome. He's an amazing guy.
He looks like it. I want to go there.
Yeah, I thought that was actually a location you guys went and said, oh, I know this great place. It's tucked away. We'll do a couple shots of it.
He even had a flock of birds flying.
Yeah, that's all Mark.
I was so impressed.
Well,
I just love the visuals of this episode. I love the fact that they're living on like an asteroid. Now it's all weird shaped. I thought that was fantastic, fantastic visual. Interesting to look at and have a place grow. You know, have a civilization grow up on such a alien type world.
Yeah, right. There's really for this episode. You know, what ships are for is so well put together. I just really blown away after I watched it. I was like, wow, I adore it. It's wonderful. So I can't say enough good things about it.
And you guys, oh man, when James called me up on the phone and said, we have our Gallisti, it's John the Lancey. Oh my God, James, I'm surprised you're not deaf in one ear. I just Oh, man.
You probably put it on speaker and held it away.
Hills, man.
Well, when I talk to you on the phone, I always have – you're on mute. I can't hear what you're saying.
That's why you keep talking over me.
That's why you couldn't hear each other when we were doing the sound test at the beginning. Now we know.
Well, yeah, how did that come together? I mean, how did
you... NDA.
Oh, yeah,
Vic, maybe. It was Vic's magic.
Vic magic.
Yeah.
His beads and rattles.
Yeah, Vic's met him through several conventions, has known him over time, and just said, hey, I'm going to give this a shot, and asked him to do it.
Wow. And he just...
Yeah, and...
He just said,
No. I mean, the first thing he said was, I'm not playing Q, am I? Because I won't do that. And we assured him he was not playing Q, and he said, I don't do things like this, but I will... Show me the script, and if I'm really in love with it, I'll do it, and... We sent him Kipley's script, and he got back to us, and he said, I'm in. I love it. So there you go.
Yeah, well,
that's amazing.
I had to change the council leader's name. It was Q, but I had to change it. So I'm not just kidding.
Q's meddling in the affairs.
Yes.
It was Qualisti, and we thought that was a little too close. So we changed it to a G.
We should change that.
Qualisti.
We should change that around. No.
So is this the third to last episode or the second to last episode?
It is the third to the last.
Third to the last. So we got two
There's
more.
Two more. Yes.
Two more coming.
A two-parter.
Wow.
Oh, it's a two-parter.
That's even better.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
And the
very exciting.
And the release dates for those are they're soon, right?
Yeah. They're coming up pretty quick. We're hard at work at post-production on both of them. Episode 10 will be released on October 18th. And episode 11 will be released less than a month later on November 13th.
Wow.
So that's at Salt Lake City Comic Con and New York City Comic Con, right?
No. Those will be internet releases. There will be sneak peeks of both of the episodes at New York City and Stan Lee's Los Angeles Comic Con.
I'm sorry. I remember that wrong.
Formerly known as Kamikaze, but still known as Kamikaze on the website.
Yes. We, out of deference to CBS's release of Discovery, which is happening right around that time, we are not premiering them at those conventions that you mentioned.
Okay.
Because it's happening right around the Discovery time, and it's just not right for us to stop on that.
Awfully convenient.
You know? Yeah, we don't want to draw attention or step on their prom dress, you know.
Right.
It's a big deal, and we don't want to get in their way.
Yeah, I just thought when Michelle was on, she mentioned those cons that we're going to when we showed at. I guess that changed
well, that
since then.
Yes, well, that has since changed.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Wow, that's great. And I know you probably can't say anything, but I'm going to say it anyways. I saw like a promo picture, and it looked like their uniforms were changing.
Where do you see a promo picture?
I saw it on the thing where it looked like the uniforms were changing into like the motion picture look.
Well, there's a lot of fan art out there, so believe everything.
Believe. All right. Well, I didn't know if it was like so. You see things all the time.
Yeah, right? I don't know if I've seen that one though, but
yeah,
I think that was wishful thinking. Like someone was like, "I want to see Kirk in the Admiral's uniform."
Well, it'd be
because
cool.
Because that's where he ends up.
Well, he does.
he does. And we do like Vic really wanted to leave the series where in the, everyone was where they were when motion picture picks up.
Okay. Makes sense.
So as for the uniforms, I would have to kill you. And right. James, I would make James do it for me, actually.
Oh, okay.
All right.
If I...
All right, I understand.
Yeah, but remember, in the motion picture, it takes place a couple of years after the end of the five-year mission. Kirk's a desk admiral.
Yeah.
Spock has been on sabbatical for a while on Vulcan, going through the Colon R. McCoy has retired
and become
from Starfleet entirely.
A disco dancer.
That's right.
He's got a necklace around him. Oh my god!
Enjoying the divorce.
How did these people who were so inseparable? How did somebody like Kirk, who, you know, you can't imagine ever giving up the captaincy of his ship, and his two closest friends, you can't imagine ever leaving his side. What happened? You know, what happened to make them do that? And that's something that people have been dying for an answer for 50 years.
Yeah.
And,
you know, the Admiral in What Ships Are For was wearing one of those.
Yeah.
New type uniform. Yeah.
They make the joke about it.
I'm like, never going to wear one of those.
What the hell was he wearing?
Yeah.
No, that's
yeah. Vic really wanted to make a moment where we draw attention to it. Like, you know, where, you know, so Bones says, "What the devil was he wearing?" And then Kirk's like, "I have no idea, but you'll never get me in one of those."
Yeah.
And then it's we know.
Is that a joke about how hard they were to get into?
Because I a joke about how unattractive they are.
And they look like, a lot of people think they look like pajamas.
Yeah.
It was a weird time, you know. It was like that. That was like the late 70s when that came out. Yeah. So that was the costumes were so much different. It was.
Yeah. But I read it took a couple of people to get people into their outfits.
Really.
And like, to go to the bathroom was a huge ordeal. So, like, I think Shatner was like, "We got to have different uniforms, and if I'm going to come back for another one,
I need to have a zipper.
I need to be able to pee."
Sorry, people. No, it's I was just interested. I saw that, and I just the continuity idea of, you know, obviously the 5-year mission is wrapping up, and what comes after is, like you said, motion picture takes place, obviously. A couple years. I'm not really sure when, but, you know, after the 5-year mission, but it's still just great to see
but
that all the little,
you know, that something is, it has big happened that drove them all away from what ostensibly they loved.
Yeah.
Which was exploring in the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Well, Bones never really loved being on the Enterprise.
He just
that's true.
He just tolerated it.
Right. Yeah.
And also, I should say, since we're talking about the 2-part finale, if your listeners have not already heard, it is written by Robert J. Sawyer, one of the foremost science fiction writers in the world today. He's won the Hugo, the Nebula, the Campbell, the Heinlein, and every other award in the book. He created the series Flash Forward for ABC.
That was a really good show.
Our finale. Yeah, it was a great show.
I was so sad it got canceled.
Yeah. He wrote the original novel that was then that they then created the series from. But great guy, great friend of ours, wonderful supporter of SDC, and he wrote our 2-part finale, which is super fun.
And incidentally, had a cameo in episode 4, The White Iris.
That's right, he did. He's at the science station on the bridge in that episode.
Oh, cool! Very nice.
Love the little cameos that y'all do.
Yeah, you guys get all these great little people. I mean, you wouldn't know unless you actually, you know, looked at the credits.
Or following it.
Yeah. And, you know, I also want to say how lucky we were to have Elizabeth Maxwell playing Sakaara in episode 9.
Yeah.
And also Anne Lockhart.
Right.
Of the original Battlestar Galacta fame. And her mother was June Lockhart playing Thais. It was like that. Those were other screamy phone calls as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And Mark Ralston.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. He was. From Aliens and Shawshank, and he was Pierce in Next Generation. The part Betazoid guy who had the imprint that was affecting Troy in the warp core. Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Mark Ralston. He played Admiral McGinnis in this episode, the medical admiral.
So. Oh
yeah.
Connecting the dots. That makes sense. That's awesome.
And even though it's not in the credits, just a little trivia point. His first name is Angus. It's General Angus McGinnis.
Admiral.
Did I say General?
General.
I just watched Crimson Tide.
We're all the generals in Starfleet, too. Generals.
It's exploratory. But that's my nephew's name, so that's a little...
All right.
I thought you would get a kick out of it, Angus McGinnis.
Did he get to see it?
Yeah. He's pretty over the moon.
That's awesome.
Sakaar is named after my best friend from Chicago. Her last name is very similar to that name. And she's not even a Trek fan, so I was like, just so you know, I did something really nerdy in your honor.
And you're going to get a lot of weird fan mail. Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. They're mostly harmless.
Most of them.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Mostly harmless.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's awesome. No, it, oh my gosh.
They might stare. You know.
Yeah. There's some guy standing out your apartment just waiting to get your autograph.
His mom let him out of the basement.
Yeah. It's, you know.
She's got him on a leash, too.
Oh, man.
We can make fun of nerds because we are nerds.
We are nerds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got... I'm not going to say it. All right.
So I know you'll mention, you know, you'll change this premieres because of a Star Trek Discovery coming out. What are you guys excited for this? What are y'all thinking about it? Because I mean, me and Aaron have been.
And do you have any? Like, you guys seem to be kind of tied into the biz. You guys got some secrets you can tell us.
Yes,
CBS would
love, if we had any spoilers. CBS love us. Well, it's. Actually takes place on a Star Wars planet.
Oh,
and
man.
The main characters are all crossroads between Wookiees and Ewoks.
Oh, man.
That's why the Klingons look different.
No, we are huge supporters of Star Trek Discovery. We've got friends who work on the series. Rod Roddenberry is a great friend of ours, and he's one of the exec producers on Discovery. And Rekha Sharma, who was our guest star in episode 8, is plays Commander Landry, the security chief. On Star Trek Discovery now. Nice. So we've got great friends on that show, and we're super, super looking forward to it.
I can't wait to see what they do.
Yeah,
same here. We're dying to see it. It seems like we've been talking about it for so long.
Yeah.
Anticipating it coming.
Like, we started the show before it was announced, and, like, maybe, like, within the first year we were... Oh, yeah, a year in, they announced it, and then we were like, whoa, you know? And then we've been talking about it forever, so just... reading every little tidbit we could get for like information about the show, you know. So it looks wonderful.
A long time, right? I mean, when did Enterprise end? I mean, that's a long time with
2005, I think.
Yeah,
2005.
With just
so it's been off.
Nothing, no regular fix of Star Trek on television.
So it's been off the air for about 12 years, but we haven't had a new series in like 16 years.
Yeah.
If you count when the Enterprise started, if you go back. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a long time.
Yep.
Yeah, it's crazy, and I'm very excited about it. I just hope that you know, we can it'll be renewed for another season and the season after that.
A golden era of Star Trek. Can we get another one, please? Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Well, I think the fans will be instrumental in that because this is what I love about Star Trek fans. They're like, we are very protective of the brand.
Yeah.
Of the heart of Star Trek. And, you know, if something about it doesn't have that heart and that feel to it, you know, Trek fans will, you know, they'll be getting on social media and being like, you know, come on, man.
They're already on social media about it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I know. It's a lot of, who knows?
Yeah,
a lot of pre-game anger. I'm just like, nothing's happened yet.
Yeah, we haven't seen anything yet. I want to give it as much chance as possible and give it some time to grow because, I mean, like, even the first season of Next Generation was not as good as, like, the... Actually...
I do not speak of the first season of Next Generation.
It's very hard to watch.
It does not exist in my world.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first three seasons of Next Gen and DS9 were on the harder side to watch. Then season 4, they kind of, like, started hitting their stride.
I have to disagree with you. Heartily. I think season 2 and 3 had some amazing episodes for the Next Gen, like Measure of a Man.
They do. I'm not writing off the entire seasons, but I feel like at season three forward, they were better more often.
Yeah, the average quality went up. Yeah. There were still excellent individual episodes. But
yeah, like
sure.
I loved
quality.
Contagion. Yeah. I thought Contagion was a great episode.
Yeah, I won't write off any of the seasons of Star Trek TNG.
I will write off season one.
But I'm just saying from a perspective, like two and three still had some hit and misses, but then once you got past three, they were more hits than miss, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah. I'll concede that.
Thank you, Mike Queen. Please don't cut off my head.
Move with the heads.
Oh man, that's awesome. No, yeah, but I do hope there was given some, you know, after the, and it's going to be totally different animal too, because we're getting a serialized episode, which is we really haven't seen other than like a couple two-parters or like callbacks here and there.
Mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine.
Well, Deep Space Nine was serialized in this last few seasons.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
quite,
right.
Quite serialized.
Yeah, that's right. That's true. But
yeah, I don't
that's
know.
Why that's why it's my favorite series, because it was so serialized.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if you guys saw the interview that Anthony Pascali, a Trek movie, did with Ira Stephen Baer last week. And it was really informative about Deep Space Nine and his feelings on why people forget how advanced that show was. For its time. There's a show on CNN right now called The 90s. Mm. And there was recently an episode about television, and there was an episode about race relations in the 90s. And in these episodes, they talk about the depiction of black characters in television shows. And in one of the episodes, they talk about how Homicide, Life on the Street, was the first ever television series to have a scene between two black characters in a scene alone with nobody else, who were not lovers, just two people talking about things that had nothing to do with race, just two black characters talking in a scene alone. And Ira Baer's like jaw hit the floor. He's like, Deep Space Nine did that years earlier in like every episode.
Right,
but it's forgotten. It's forgotten that this show broke incredible ground in the serialization of television. And if you go back and you watch it, I would argue that with the exception of Enterprise, which is a more modern HD kind of feel to it, if you go back and you watch any of the other Star Trek series, the one that has aged the least is Deep Space Nine, I think, by far. It looks very much like – it looks and feels very much like a modern Game of Thrones, Westworld type of television show. And, you know, the other shows were great, but they don't have that kind of modern feel to them that DS9 does. I think it was really ahead of its time.
I would totally agree with you. I think the reason Deep Space Nine is forgotten is because, I mean, it was technically forgotten by the studio. That's why they were able to do the things that they were able to do.
Because the studio
was focused on TNG, and like, hey, this is great. We've got to put another Star Trek. And then, so the first couple seasons of DS9 weren't that great because the studio had their hands in it. But then as soon as, you know, they started up Voyager, the studio forgot about it. And so, Voyager somehow came out on top. And even with most fans, I think a lot of fans think Voyager is better than Deep Space Nine, but Deep Space Nine was forgotten by a lot of people.
Well, yeah, and Ira Baer talks about that in this discussion as well, about how like they got away with stuff that they never would have gotten away with had the execs been paying attention to what they were doing.
Like
in The Pale Moonlight, man, you would never see a captain in any of the other series do what Sisko did in that episode.
I know.
But he did it because it was the right thing to do, you know? And maybe Archer in that one episode where he steals the warp coil. Maybe. That's kind of close.
Well, I was reading on the Memory Alpha, because we actually recently talked about the episode Explorers, the scene where Bashir and O'Brien are getting drunk and singing. Like, they said that would have never happened. Like, they were, like, really pushing and hoping they didn't get caught with that scene.
Deep Space Nine definitely is totally different compared to any other. For its credit, and sometimes I think it alienates some people, too, for who love the original Star Trek and the TNG, because it's like, it is
so different.
It's. I mean, you're still in the same universe, but you're in a totally different. You're like in
Wild West.
Yeah, it is.
And that's what it was pitched as a Wild West saloon type outpost.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing that he said that was really funny is that in a lot of the publicity materials for Discovery, they're saying this show does what no other Star Trek show has ever done. There's conflict between the regular characters.
Yeah,
and I remember like, that. Hello.
Why yeah. is it just wasn't popular for whatever reason, and I don't understand that, because I think it's by far the best.
You know, there was conflict between Riker and Worf when, you know, Deanna Troi became a romantic interest for Worf. I just want to say.
That is true. There was. Mm-hmm. The end of TNG, they did start to introduce a little bit of that. With Ro as well, when they introduced Ro.
Yeah.
That was something that they never would have done in the earlier seasons.
Well, she's Bajoran, so they just cause all sorts of conflict.
They're perpetually in a bad mood.
Well, they were been oppressed for a very long time.
Yeah, that's true. And in Enterprise, this is so shameless, and I'm going to hate myself.
Oh boy!
But they did do one thing. They did have a red shirt speak after death.
Yeah, but that actress was utterly forgettable.
Yes,
that's why the episode I was in was called The Forgotten. It really was.
There you go.
Yes. And I know that James argues with me on technically whether or not I can be considered, like, crewman Jane Taylor can be considered a red shirt, because I wasn't a security officer and I had a last name. But
well,
that's true.
I would bend the rules just so that I can have a moment.
The only reason you had a last name is because Trip was trying to write a letter to your parents.
I mean, I was already dead. You didn't even get to see me die.
Yeah. No, I'm that's true, I guess. Yeah, you know, I noticed that the original series, there were some definitely uniform changes that were bizarre. You know, what was it? Space Seed, the lady who was doing that fell in love with Khan.
That, yes.
She
MacGyver's.
Was, yeah, MacGyver's. Thank you. She wore a red, and it was like, that'd make any sense that she's wearing a red.
History.
She should be wearing a blue.
Yeah, it's a history major.
I don't know why it would be under technical or security for engineering security for under that. I think she just looked good in red.
It's operations. I mean, red is anything except for science and command. It's anything involved in ship's operations, any other department is red.
See, I always took it as security but I could be wrong. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, Uhura is in red, you know.
Except in one episode, she's in yellow.
It's true. She's in yellow that one episode.
Bam!
Uhura is in yellow in two episodes, Corbomite and the first Mud episode. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, but it was like, you're like, yeah,
she also was a lieutenant, but she had ensign rank on her sleeves, MacGyver.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
she was wearing someone else's uniform
in the first season. There were wardrobe screw ups.
She's borrowing somebody's uniform.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The other interesting thing, especially in those early episodes in the first season of TOS, if you look at the patches, the Delta patches, a lot of times the division symbol on the patch does not match the color of the uniform, and they switch around. Like, Scotty sometimes is wearing a science patch for absolutely no reason, and like things move around. And the reason for that was that according to SAG rules, uniforms had to be, the clothes had to be washed every day.
Oh.
Those patches could not go through the laundry machines because they would like kink up and the threads would pull. So every day at the end of shooting, the wardrobe department had to remove the patches. They threw them into a box. They washed, they laundered the uniforms, and then they grabbed the patches out of the box and sewed them back on, not paying attention to which was which.
Wow.
And until people started pointing out, like, wait a minute, I'm wearing the wrong thing today.
That's
so
awesome.
They eventually got a system in place by which to fix that. But if you look in those early episodes, it's crazy. The patches are all over the place.
Well, that's the one thing I do like about the original series is that, like, a lot of things aren't really worked out yet.
You know,
the continuity is kind of all over the place. So
yeah, sometimes by accident.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
but you know, it endured because of the wonderful character development and stories. It's like that's what I get concerned about today. Is like when something has like a ton of money and a giant budget. Sometimes like, I hope I don't offend anyone, but I just saw Alien Covenant and I was very disappointed. And it like had all the sleek and special effects and all the fancy stuff, but the story was so disjointed and weird and overkill. And, you know, and it's like the original Alien, like the original, like Star Trek, was simple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
What made you afraid, what made you care was the characters and really like the buildup of the tension, some great acting and not seeing.
Mm-hmm.
The alien, But in Covenant, they have great acting, but not so much the character development. And then you saw aliens every 4 seconds, and they look different. There's 15,000 different kinds of aliens that you saw.
Yeah,
you know, it takes the building up of suspense away.
Well, what do you think about this? Because I was considering this before. I watched the original Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan the Barbarian recently, and there was just some scenes in there that were just so drawn out. And I thought, you know, nowadays they wouldn't even give it that long. Like, there's a scene at the very beginning where Conan was a young boy, and the James Earl Jones cuts off his mother's head. And there's this where he, like, looks at her, and he's like, you think he's going to spare her, but he doesn't. And he has this, like, it's this long, drawn shot of James Earl Jones. And then, you know, he cuts off her head, you know. But and I thought, like, you would never see that today. Like, the way they, edit and produce films now, everything's got to be so fast, and it's got to be, like, in your face constantly. There's no time to savor. Think.
I think it's the short attention span that we have these days with all of our devices and this and that. I feel like I know exactly what you're talking about. And it feels like the studios are afraid to have too much dead air because they're afraid they'll lose their audience.
Yeah.
Well, let me say this, though, too. I think one thing, I agree with everything Kipley said, but I think one thing you said you're wrong about, which is that it's easier. It's not. You had said something about how, I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly what you said. You said something like, you said something like it's easier for them to do it. In the original series, things were easier is what you said, compared to how things are now.
I said simpler.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I think it's different. I think it's the opposite. I think it's very simple and easy to create stuff the way it's created. Now, shoot a money hose at it.
Oh, I didn't. Can you
aim that money hose over our way?
Well, Kip, I don't think
it was easy, but it was simple. They didn't distract you with unnecessary extra bling. Yeah. You know,
but the simpleness that you're talking about is actually extremely complex to create. It takes an enormous amount of effort to develop dialogue and characters and scenes and moments with that much nuance to them. It's much easier for flash, 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 flash,
it
flash.
Is. But you know what the cheapest part of a film is? The script. And it seems like the script has been forgotten.
It's also difficult. And that's the thing. That's the thing I was going to say is that, you know, I'm not really a writer. I'm primarily a director. I've written some of the STC episodes, but you know, I can't write like Kipley writes. Like when
yes, you can.
Well, let me finish what I'm saying. when we got this script from Kipley and I read it, I was like the nuance and the complexity in this. And yes, like she said, it took her a long time to do it, but the nuance and the complexity in these characters is so intricate. That's very, very difficult to create. It's much easier not to do that. You know what I mean? It's much easier to focus on the visuals and say, let's cut it this way. Let's throw in a sound effect. Let's throw in some visuals. Let's do this. Everything's going to be great and flashy. But the time and the patience, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that it takes to craft these moments is something that not a lot of people have the talent to do. I wish I could write like she does, frankly.
I think you're a brilliant writer.
But no, I'm being serious. It's like that. That's why I think episode 9 is the most TOS episode we've done. You know what I'm saying? Like story wise, it's very. I think that's why so many people have said this feels like the original series. All of our episodes have been wonderful. I'm not, you know, but this one has this specific kind of feel to it that I think is really important, and that is a magic that you can either capture or you can't. You know.
Thank you for saying that.
I would totally agree with that. Where it is. The most TOS feeling with that moral dilemma, the thing happening with the times, it just all worked and all fit together very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would agree it's the most TOS-y feeling of them all.
And don't get me wrong.
They've all been great.
Yeah, they have all been wonderful, and I've enjoyed every one of them. They have been wonderful. There's nothing I can say bad about any of them. It's just that when I saw what Ships Are Made For in the story was like, you know, I'm not going to say anything, you know, and I'm a nobody, but Kipley, you could have a career in writing, you know.
I would love to have one. If anyone out there needs a writer, I'm available.
Sharpen your pencils.
I didn't know. I mean, I've always wanted to write, and I've written a lot of, I helped write or work on the screenplay that James and I want to produce next called RUR. And I've, helped out. I've done some sort of script review and then like suggestions and writing new things in for people and stuff like that. But from beginning to end, writing a teleplay, I've never done that. And I know I can. And I was so afraid that, I don't know that I would miss something, that I wouldn't catch the heart of Star Trek. Cause I know that you can't fool Star Trek fans. They can feel it. They know it's there or it's not there.
Yeah.
No, I don't think you missed anything. I think you got it.
I think the script is something, not my script, but it's the script in general. Like, I agree, it's hard to write a script that can capture you because people have to read them. Like in Hollywood, they have to, the big executives don't read the script. They have a staff that reads the script. And some people are good at visualizing something on a page and some people aren't. So sometimes a script on a page cannot speak properly depending on who's reading it. But like with Alien Covenant and all these big Hollywood blockbuster movies, it's not because the scripts aren't out there. There are so many talented writers and they all come here or they're in New York and with brilliant screenplays, they just can't get them seen. Mm-hmm. And that's the tragedy. So it's like, then you get, I don't know. And I love Ridley Scott and Alien is my favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
And so I'm very protective of Alien. I
don't mess with it.
Yeah. I don't like any, I like Alien and Aliens. Period. The end.
I like those two, but I also like the third one for different reasons, but it's not as good.
The third one wasn't terrible. I did watch that and I have respect for it. And then, but fourth one, I walked out.
No, that's terrible.
I actually liked Prometheus for what it was. It wasn't my favorite movie, but I didn't think it was nearly as bad as a lot of.
You know what? I don't hate Prometheus either. I just wish they would have tightened some things up with it.
Me too. Yeah. I know what he was going for, Ridley Scott. And Alien Covenant to me seems exactly like what the effect Prometheus would have had, which is, I think Ridley Scott wanted to go back to less of a high energy, high octane action film, back to a story that did take some time.
Yeah. Right.
And I guess because it didn't do so well, Hollywood's like, well, if you're going to make another one, you got to get that octane back in there.
Yeah, you better get those aliens eating people and, bursting out of chest right away.
Is there a way you can put two naked people in a shower that get killed by an alien? Thank you. You did it. Thank you.
Let's Game of Thronesify this, please.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think what happens is no matter how good intentions are, producers and studios get in and they want certain things, and if they're not seeing it, they get turned off and they start meddling with it. So
I have no doubt that Ridley Scott did not write that or did not approve of that final draft of that script or all the stuff that was in it. But this, you had the brass come in and say, if you want it to be marketable, you got to do this, 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 and this. And he, had to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
I don't know. Have you guys seen Alien Covenant?
I did not, but I hated Prometheus.
No, I seen it. I agree. I think they're just, It had the right premise, but it didn't quite make it.
I wanted to see Covenant. I just never got around to.
Spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, real quick. But did you see, this is something that I don't understand about some Hollywood storytelling. And in Prometheus, there was a little bit of that. Remember how they had the two cowardly guys that were like, I'm not going in that ship. No way, man. Get me off this planet. And they were really, calcified and fought.
They were so excited about that snake for some reason.
About the penis fish or the snake or snake eel. Yeah. It's like they completely reversed the characters that had been written. And I don't know. It's like, why would you? It reads wrong. Bad then you're writing. Taken out of the moment and you're like, ugh. And then when people do stupid things like an Alien Covenant, you're just like, oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Well,
you were chosen to go into space. Why?
Because you're the dumbest person on the planet.
That's I will right. risk my whole ship for my wife. I'll risk all your lives for my wife.
I'll risk all these other couples for my one wife.
My one wife.
Yeah. And the thing that astounded me was that, again, spoilers, they had the two androids played by Michael Fassbender, right?
Right.
The one from Prometheus.
Sure.
And a new one.
Yeah.
And at, early on in the film, you saw the old android, I believe his name is David, from Prometheus. Mm-hmm. The new one is Walter. You saw him change his appearance to match the new android identically. And you're like, gee, I wonder if he's going to switch places with him. And that's like in the first act of the film. So the whole time you're like, yeah, we know. We know what's coming. We know what's coming. And I thought, there's no way they would telegraph that if it's supposed to be a surprise. And
lo and behold.
And I was like, I bet that there's a red herring. They're going to make us think they're going to switch places. And then they don't. And then that's going to be the surprise. And I was like, I'll have mad respect for that choice. But no. Nope.
I'm actually surprised you remember all the names. I can't.
I just saw it. I saw it a couple weeks ago.
All right. I'm like, whoa, I can't. Man, I can't believe it. I mean, I remember now that you're saying it. I'm like, wow, I can't. Wow.
Well, it's not like I saw it, like, you know, when it first came out and I've been stewing on it the whole time. Or maybe, but I have stewing on it since then. But I saw it with my sister. She and I were alien fanatics.
No, no. Aliens is a wonderful franchise. And I, you know, Prometheus fell down. I think it had some points that could have been great. It could have been an awesome movie. It just didn't quite hit the spots it needed to, but whatever, you know.
And then Alien Covenant was like, they made the cake, they frosted the cake, then they poured hot fudge on the cake, and then they poured, you know, another vat of hot fudge and more frosting until you ended up with just this, like, very little cake and just a lot of frosting.
And then they sat on it.
Mm-hmm. They sat on it, and it made a big fart sound.
Yeah.
And they peed on
it. I mean, it got mixed reviews. Some people liked it, and it had some cool concepts in it. I liked the cast. I thought they had a good
cast. The cast was great. Yeah, it was really good.
It's just like they were like, what can we throw into this? You know, did you guys ever see the TV show called The River?
I did not.
No, what's that?
It was on briefly. It had Bruce Greenwood in it. And it was like a boat going through the Amazon and encountering haunted, scary things. And like, it reminded me of that because someone, like, I imagine the writer's room where they're like, what are people afraid of? Clowns. All right, let's get some clowns in there. Talking dolls in there. Like every horror movie cliche, I can look it up when it came out. Every horror movie cliche was in there. Like they would go down this river in the Amazon doing a science thing. And you'd be like, oh, look, hanging doll heads. Oh, look, an alien. Oh, look, here comes killer clowns. Here comes an axe murderer. Like, it was like so ridiculous.
That sounds fascinating.
To try to put all the things that people like in one thing, it comes out this sort of hybrid mutant monster, and not in a good way.
That's awesome. That sounds great. I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a ton of shows that came out that never did, like Carnival or something like that was a great show that never got that far. I think it canceled.
Oh, I liked it. Yeah. It was 2012. The River was in 2012. Okay. And at first, it was really good. It captured my attention early on. And then when they got into the, like, I'm sorry, I don't mean to dominate the con- I get
no,
really
go ahead.
Very, but just like with a lot of Hollywood movies, I always like the first act is always great. That's the mystery. What's going to happen? Where's the story going? What's the big bad? What's coming down the what's the hook? And then when you finally get to see the monster, if it's one of those kinds of movies, then it's nothing but Fast and Furious with monsters. You know, they just lose the storytelling, the suspense, the buildup.
But isn't that always how it happens? It's like you see like a scary movie or a horror movie or whatever, and then like the anticipation and the fear is probably the most palpable part of the movie. And then when you actually get to the monster or whatever it is, the real answer is you're like, oh, that's what it is? All right.
Yeah, if it's done well, like The Thing, I thought it was done well, both. Or Alien. Well, Alien, when you saw the monster, it was not like anything you'd ever seen before.
No, that was a different time, too. You know, people were like, what the hell is that thing?
Yeah, and now all aliens are insectoid. They are all insects,
right?
If they're not humanoid, except for a movie called Attack the Block, which had a very cool non-insectoid alien. I liked it.
I didn't see that.
I'm sorry. I feel like I'm just, like, yammering now.
No, you're right. I mean, it's what you want to talk about. It's awesome.
There's like good storytelling.
I just wish I'd seen Covenant so I could respond to it more, but I didn't like
it. I've totally ruined it for you now.
I don't care. I spoil things all the time for myself. I'm spoilers don't bother me in the least.
He leaves milk out on the front porch to get really hot, and then he drinks it, so...
He's a sadist. He's a dairy sadist. Yeah. But I'll wrap up and say, like, just my tirade. I'll wrap up by saying that, like, good storytelling has remained the same since cavemen sat around the campfire. There are some key elements. It's in Shakespeare. It's in novels. It's in every good movie you've seen. It's like the Joseph Campbell idea.
The hero's journey,
of the hero story. You know, there are archetypes. There are basic qualities that are amazing storytelling that touch the human heart. And it's like we've forgotten it. It's not that it's this quest to find it. It's the Holy Grail. What's the perfect story? There are a lot. It's been around since we could talk, and we just don't do it anymore.
Yeah, I agree. I it happens all the time. And there's so many times where I see like a great franchise or something that just doesn't seem to really jive. And you're just like, why can't, you know, these people are getting good money to write a story. Why can't they just get the story right?
Yeah, I mean, the story, it seems like it's one of the hardest things to do.
The effects, we're all there with the effects.
Yeah, I mean...
And there's nothing wrong with effects. I'm not saying the use of effects is... But when you replace key story elements with just bling and effects, you know...
Yeah,
it loses something.
I feel like it's too many cooks. Like, maybe the script comes down the pike, and one person makes these changes, and another makes these changes, and then the script that the person wrote and the script that's made are vastly different.
Right, yeah. Too many hands in the pot, and they keep changing, throwing too many spices in and whatever.
Like, art by committee rarely, rarely works. That's why something like Game of Thrones is such a gem, because they keep getting it right, in my opinion.
Yeah, like no doubt. No doubt. That's and the story is driven by that. I mean, it's...
And I feel like that's what Star Wars is suffering from. Star Wars is all by committee now, and that's what's... I think it's killing
Star Wars. Don't get me started on Star Wars.
Yeah.
I've had this conversation with Dave before that, you know, the Disney owning Star Wars and Marvel, we're getting the homogenization of all these great franchises, and it's not that it's bad that they're doing it, it's just that it's becoming almost too... milquetoast, and there's nothing like, whoa, that's really different, you know? Like, I mean,
they have branches like Pixar that are still really, really original. Like, they're owned by Disney. It's almost like it's the second rung down of executives that are the ones that pollute.
Yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, that's just what they're just trying to hit all the milestones that they think is going to sell a film. And a lot of times they're not wrong, but will those be memorable? Like, you know, me and Dave walked out of Rogue One and we're like, you know, it was a fun movie. I'm not going to say it, but
turn your brain all the way off.
No. Dave's a little more severe than me, but I mean, but like I enjoyed it, but it didn't walk away going like, wow, I loved every second of that. There's a lot of things I think, like character development, they were lacking.
Yeah,
you know.
I mean, the effects were amazing.
Yeah, and how they
ILM did them, but the story you know,
just wasn't quite there. I mean, I didn't care about the characters, you know. So, I mean, stuff like that. I mean, it's whatever. I mean, that's just my opinion, and some people.
You know what it's like, you guys, when you have all the effects and no story.
What's that like?
It's like window dressing for a dead man.
Amen. Amen, Kipley.
Recognize that quote?
I can't place
it's from The Royale, the episode, season 2 episode The Royale from Star Trek Next Generation.
Yes.
They find Colonel S. Ritchie in the skeleton, and Riker's like, it's
as bad as an episode is. I love it. I love parts of it. I love seeing Data gamble. It's not a great episode.
Like, it's a hard episode to watch.
On a dead story, you know?
It's a hard episode to watch.
Yeah, we're coming
we
up
should try to start something like Jumping the Shark. It'll be that's a Colonel S. Ritchie movie, meaning there's nothing inside except bones and a lot of big effects outside.
Right.
We're coming up on the hour mark. So what with Star Trek Continues wrapping up, what are you guys working on going forward? Or do you have anything lined up?
Wait, can I say something about the Royale?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry, I have not been here for the past 20 minutes because I've been I was stuck on the two naked people in the shower in Alien Covenant, and I just, you know,
had to take a break.
Yeah,
looked it up, screenshot it.
I gotta go to the bathroom.
Oh no, that's what I've been doing. The great thing about, you know what the great thing is about the Royale?
What's that?
The surface temperature of the planet, Theta 116, was negative 291 degrees Celsius.
Damn, that's cold.
which is 6 degrees below absolute zero Kelvin, which is physically impossible.
They hit ammonia storms. You never know what happens.
No. Absolute zero is no energy at all. You cannot be below absolute zero.
Where were the science advisors for that one?
Dear retroactive Star Trek Linux generation, I am offended by your...
You know what? No, but that's... Actually, Kipley, that'd be awesome. We should just write, like to dead letters to all the things. There's everything that were, like, scientifically problems we have with the
Paramount
episodes.
Like,
just
Paramount in the 90s and the late 80s.
Dead letters office to the Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know? Like we have to predate them. So, yeah. Like, if they just get lost, like, pretending like they get lost in the mail.
And they're just publish them online and make it look... That'd be hilarious.
That would. Oh, we should do it.
Like, well, why did you make a wooden ship?
Let me tell you the funny story about this. I have a minor degree in astrophysics. When I was in college, my astrophysics professor used Star Trek The Next Generation all the time as an example of word problems we had to do.
Wow.
No, seriously. Like he would say, okay, so Mr. Data is calculating the distance from this planet to this planet, and you'd have to do all these complex physics problems based on the Enterprise. It made it fun. But that was one thing that he always harped on. The Royale, the temperature was negative 291 degrees Celsius.
It can't happen,
so
people!
So that's like been burned in my mind. He's like, that can't happen!
It's been frozen impossible. In your mind.
That's awesome. But that's great. And that, you know, if anybody wants to get on that, that'd be a great idea. Just to write a dead letters thing to, you know.
Retroactive complaints.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's do it.
I want to rewrite Alien Covenant and then just publish that script and totally get sued for it. But, you know, it's like I could tell, like I was watching and I'm like, oh, if they'd just done that, it could have been great.
I want to see your version of Alien Covenant, Kipley.
I think you could do it.
I want to see your version of Prometheus, too. I want to see you fix it.
Fix
they're more penis vagina fish.
Yes! All over the place.
Most of it would be just that.
I would go for it.
Love it. Oh, man. This is a conversation I've wanted to have for a long time.
Penis vagina fish.
Yes. All right.
That's right.
All those.
Speaking of penises and vagina, you're asking about what our next projects are. No, that was a terrible segue.
That was a great
asking
segue.
About this?
Hey, look, those injection shots better work for me. So
he doesn't have the money for the mastectomy yet.
Yeah,
I am sorry. I
one
did.
Injection.
I did cut you off. What was the question?
No, that was a good point though about that.
What
was saying going forward.
Yeah, going forward, with Star Trek Continues wrapping up, what are your next projects? I know you mentioned RUR earlier, and we also talked about it a little bit last time you were on the show. You said you're going to work on RUR next, or is there something else? What's going on?
There is something before that.
Yes, there is. We are still developing RUR into a feature. In the meantime, Kipley and I and Vic and Lisa Hansel, a producer of STC and our makeup supervisor on STC, as well as Michael Forrest, who played Apollo in the original series and Star Trek Continues, and John DeLancey. We are all working on a short film called When the Train Stops, which we'll be shooting at the end of the year. And you can look that up on Facebook. There's a When the Train Stops page, and there will be more information forthcoming. But it's a very cool... kind of psychological thriller with a twist type of thing.
Cool.
A twist
of lime. Sorry.
A refreshing twist of lime.
I did not drink with lime.
It's a really cool story, and I don't want to talk about it too much because it's the kind of thing like if you talk about it, it ruins it.
Yeah.
So just
it's a really cool psychological journey thing. It's really cool.
So keep your eyes out for
cool.
that.
Cool. Definitely look that up.
For that.
We'll do.
In the meantime, we are. If anybody is in the Los Angeles area, by the way, we are screening episode 9, What Ships Are For, this coming Saturday, September 9th, as part of the Burbank International Film Festival at AMC Town Center Burbank 16.
That's awesome.
Theater. It's a free screening.
Nominated for an award.
It is a free screening. Anybody can come. You do have to make a reservation online at burbankfilmfest.org. There is an after party for $50 that people can attend if they want to. The screening itself is completely free. The festival is sponsoring it themselves. They're paying for it themselves. And anybody can log in and get a reservation for it. But there's an after party. The screening's at 9 o'clock p.m. this Saturday. But then there's an after party following it at the IATSE 80 soundstage in Burbank. And that's a $15 ticket. But you get open bar
and cast of the show will be there.
Yeah, our actors will be there, so you get to mingle with them and all that kind of stuff. So,
and you can go to burbankfilmfest.com for information and
org.
I am getting all the information wrong. I should just let you speak, and I just go and be blonde somewhere else.
Nah, don't do that. You remember the names of everybody in Covenant and
that's true,
so
that's
nothing to be taken lightly.
I get self-righteous about it too, and then talk too much. So.
That's all right. You are the guest.
So yeah.
Yeah, guys, I mean, really, if you're cool out there, go check this out. This is an amazing episode. If you haven't seen it yet, and we've spoiled it to death for you, but go see it.
Yeah, for
go
sure.
Go say hi to the actors.
Yeah, no, that's going to be awesome. I wish I lived out there. So
me too. We're over in Buffalo where it's cold.
It's 95 degrees here. So yeah.
It's not that
sucks
cold
for you guys.
Yeah,
it's usually cold hot. In Buffalo. Yep.
It's usually cold.
We have ash
cold.
Falling outside right now because of a bunch of wildfires. Oh, yep. It looks like it's snowing a little.
Well, yep. we get the real snow here, so not your ashy.
Are we having a weather showdown?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. We got earthquakes.
Your weather's so fat it does, I don't know, something wrong.
You have a soup volcano in the vicinity that's going to erupt someday? No.
No. No. Don't think so.
Probably not.
I don't think so.
But you guys did have Sandy in New York not too long.
We did have that. And we get like wicked blizzard type in the winters.
Yeah, I don't miss that.
Yeah.
It's hard to miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't miss it.
You got to be a special type of person to miss that.
But yeah, I'm really excited that you guys are also going to be working on putting RUR into a feature-length film, because I love that. Me and Aaron actually watched it right before we got on Skype with you guys.
Yeah, cool stuff.
RUR is such a cool little concept, and I can't wait to see it blown up into a feature-length.
For sure, yeah.
Can we say the website for anyone who hasn't seen the teaser yet? If they want to go see our little 7-minute RUR teaser?
Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes for sure.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anytime. Where can we find you guys on social media? Where can our listeners find you?
Well, I have on Twitter, I'm at Kipley Brown, KIPLEIGH, Brown like the color. And then I have a website, which you can contact me through, kipley.com. And I would say Facebook, but I'm terrified of it and never log in because it, you know, technically I'm on it, but I find it overwhelming.
You won't go.
I am jameskerwin.com, James, KERWIN.com, and at James Kerwin on Twitter and at James Kerwin on Facebook.
Sweet.
I'd like to say at jameskerwin.cool.
Cool.
Dot cool.
I've reserved that one. I've got an advanced reservation on that one. Once at cool.
Once that cool starts showing up. Right.
Yeah.
Cool. That'll be fantastic.
Nice.
Well, we're still
please visit StarTrekContinues.com, which is our official.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Check it out. And watch the episodes.
The best way to watch all of our episodes, all of our behind the scenes video, our blooper reels, our interactive virtual reality set tours, our bios of all of our cast members and crew, and any news, our blog newsletter you can sign up for there. And so any upcoming news about screenings and things will always be StarTrekContinues.com.
Sweet. Yeah, it's wonderful. And if anybody hasn't seen it, if you've gotten this far in the show, what are you waiting for? For God's sakes.
Go see Star Trek Continues. And it's on YouTube. If you don't even want to look up, if Star Trek Continues is too long to type in, you can find it on YouTube.
For sure.
Yeah, that is true.
All right. Well, we're SithTheHolics.com. You can find us on Twitter at SithTheHolic Duo. I'm David_J_Duncan on Twitter.
I'm Blackbird2004.
And you can listen to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, wherever you find your podcasts.
Absolutely. And if you have a minute, if you can go on to iTunes, you can rate and review us. 5 stars preferably. Give us a little review. That's wonderful. And if you have a little change that you could throw our way, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/synthaholics.com. and buck a month. What's a buck a month? You know, a little bit our way just to keep the podcast rolling a little more.
You can feed a hungry synthaholic for just $1 a month.
Thank you. That's wonderful. That's exactly what we needed. Man.
We'll have to get that as like a free pre-show.
I will remember you.
Yeah, oh, we still got to do our triple video about that. That'd be hilarious.
Your donation will help these gentlemen finally realize.
That's it.
Move into an actual studio one day.
Awesome.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, James and Kipley, for joining us this week. It's been a pleasure having you. It's been over a year since we had you last. It's been too long.
It's wonderful talking to you, and wonderful writing, wonderful, you know, these episodes.
Directing,
everything. It's been great. So thank you so much for everything that you've done for us. We really have enjoyed
it. Thank you for your love and support of STC.
Always.
Well, you guys help get the word out about it, and thank you.
We definitely do our best. We'll live long and prosper, one and all. Thank you all for listening.
I love you guys so much.
We love you.
I love you so much. It's over. I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. I'm synthaholic.
She's a synthaholic.
Yes!
She's been drinking.
I am.
Have you been drinking?
No, I'm completely sober, and I love you guys so much.
Wow.
No, I don't.
That's never
you guys
been,
are awesome. Thank you.
No one's ever said that. No sober person's ever said that to me. Dave never said that to me, and he's always drunk.
I'm drunk when I open the door when he comes over.
Hey, you finally showed up, you asshole.
I'm drunk on good conversation.
Oh, my God.
James is just shaking his head.
Thanks. James has to put up with this.
Yeah, seriously, guys, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun, and it's awesome having you on again.
Sure. Anytime you want.
Yeah, we got to get you on for Measure of a Man because we've been holding it for you.
Yes. I'd love it. I would love it.
Cool.
Thank you.
Do you have the extended copy? Have you seen the extended version of it?
Was there more Brian Brophy who played Maddox?
Yeah, he actually walks in on the party.
Oh, he's such a great actor. I
hey guys.
It's like, yeah, I need to see you, Dan. It's like, I've got to take you apart and study you. What a party.
Are you having fun? Not anymore.
We'll make this party fun when we see what's inside your brain.
You make him sound like a pervert, which he was.
Well,
you know, he was all for the androids.
That's right.
Robosexual, like on Futurama.
Oh, jeez.
Damn.
I can sense the penis face is going to come back into this conversation any minute.
It's pretty soon.